This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Welcome back to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, brought to you with the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. I'm Johnny Hart. Each week, we review the stories that made the business and market headlines, as well as look forward to the week to come. And it's hello again to Craig Earlham, Senior Market Analyst at Oanda. How are you doing?
I'm very good, mate. How are you?
Yes, a slightly more quiet week than the previous. What was your market moment of the week?
Well, I think the market moment of the week is what we're going through right now. It's the one that's yet to heavily move the markets. The equity markets, well, financial markets as a whole today really have been in risk-averse mode in anticipation of this G7 meeting, or what is now being referred to as the G6 plus one. Thanks to Trump's best effort to isolate the US, be it on trade, on Iran, on climate change. And that's quite clearly been referenced actually on Thursday evening by Emmanuel Macron, who stated that if the US and if Trump wants to isolate himself, then that's fine. But the six other members will very much stick by the same message and continue to work towards what these countries for years now have been working towards, which is closer ties and more trade. And I think and Trump clearly wasn't too happy with that. We saw the tweet that came out shortly after referencing trade again with the EU and with Canada. And it was clearly quite an angry tweet. But again, this is what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot more hostility from different leaders here towards each other. Now, the negotiations in Quebec may be very nice. They may not be. The comments which come afterwards, the prepared remarks, may be something that suggests a cooperation in the future. But there's clearly quite a lot of hostility towards each other here. Justin Trudeau, we said a couple of weeks ago, was very unhappy at the announcement that they were going to follow through with these tariffs against allies on national security reasons. And this is where we are headed. And this is something that Trump has been pushing towards for a long time. And it may be a negotiating stance, and that's that. And it could work. It may not work. But relations between the US and other countries have quite clearly been damaged in this process. And there's still no guarantee that he's going to get what he wants as a result of this. So I think we're heading for an extremely interesting period. Markets are clearly very quite nervous about what the outcome is going to be. And it seems that Trump is turning his attentions elsewhere because he's not making much progress on this. He's leaving the meeting tomorrow morning to go and meet with Kim Jong-un to hopefully score a diplomatic win and foreign policy victory, because he's making no progress elsewhere. And again, that really says a lot about Trump. It's about the wins. It's not necessarily about the issues that really matter.
Very interesting what you're saying, though, about negotiating stance, because almost everything seems to be a kind of negotiation point. We talk about this in relation to the Brexit negotiations. We don't know whether people actually mean what they say. And certainly the same thing goes with Trump. The spat over the last few weeks between the Koreans and the US over will they, won't they, that's ended up in the actual summit going ahead. President Trump has called for Russia to be readmitted to the group. And I'm sure that's going to anger America's traditional allies, Germany, France and the United Kingdom.
I think we're getting really complicated when we start to talk about Russia coming back to the table, especially given the proximity to the event with the poisoning in the UK. Theresa May is not going to stand up too firmly to Donald Trump, who she's relying on for a trade deal post-Brexit. But at the same time, she is going to be looking towards the other members who she is opposing in the Brexit negotiations, so mainly France and Germany, for support on keeping Russia to one side for now because of what has happened in the UK and the threat that she still sees, continues to see from Russia, the interference that we've seen that many have appeared or argued they have evidence on of Russian interference. I don't think there's going to be much appetite from a number of countries for Russia to rejoin the G7 or G6 plus one or whatever we're going to call it in the future until it shows signs that it is willing to work with these other countries. Now, of course, we have seen some indication in Italy that they want to bring Russia back to the table. And I'm sure there is some appetite as well from fringe parties in Germany, and I think it was the AfD.
Are we
this
really
week.
Taking these populist parties? I mean, I know they are the parties of government in Italy. Are we really taking them that seriously, that they're calling on the likes of Russia, which is the sort of thing that you might expect from Trump in some weird way, to actually come back? But we're taking the word of the populist parties in Italy now as sort of leading the way.
Well, they are a major country, so this is the problem with these parties getting into government, is that they do therefore have influence when it comes to the negotiating table. So we have to take this for what it's worth. And if you've got Italy calling for the return of negotiations and talks with Russia, and you've got the US calling for them to return to the G8, and you're seeing domestic pressure on the likes of Angela Merkel because of the close trade ties between Germany and Russia to engage with Russia again, then you would think that it may be a matter of time, and someone like, again, Theresa May not have the sway that she may have had a few years ago. So it is a difficult period. And again, it does just feel like we're going back almost towards a G6. And then again, how much smaller can these things get? The EU27 are very strong. The EU28 would have been a lot stronger. The breaking down of these allies is going to be music to the ears of certain people or in certain countries. And I know Vladimir Putin naturally springs to mind because he sees this crumbling relationship as a victory on his part.
It's perverse, though, when you think about it. On the one hand, Prime Minister May is on the side of Emmanuel Macron and Angela Merkel in these G7 negotiations. And then on the other, she's got to come back, take part in the EU talks as well.
Geopolitics is a massive thing right now, and it's a massive worry for the markets. It feels like we're speaking more when we're referencing financial markets and how they're moving and where they're moving. It feels like nowadays we're speaking a lot more about these political and geopolitical standoffs.
That's what they are, standoffs. Nothing much has actually happened yet, has it?
It hasn't. It's the risk of them happening. And the reason nothing happened is a relief, but it's also why markets are still near these record high levels, because nothing's actually happened yet. But you are seeing nervousness among investors. And when if things do start to go awry, then you will see much more negativity in markets. But you can see right now, everything seems to be a little bit of a balancing act right now. And that is a dangerous situation to be in. But it's so difficult to know how it's going to develop, if it's going to go badly, but how are we going to see a significant improvement? Because as you referenced earlier on, a lot of this, I do believe, is a negotiating tactic in order for people to get what they want. And when you've got someone like Donald Trump in the US, who's run businesses for years, and one of the things that's made him so successful has been his ability to find people's weak points and pile a lot of pressure onto
it. And confuse them, I suppose.
Yes, but also do it in quite an aggressive manner in order to get what you want, then it's not surprising that he is taking this onto the global stage in the political arena. And in some cases, that will work. And as you've seen with North Korea, it has worked. Although, again,
we don't know, really, do we? Because we don't know whether this was the intention of the North Koreans in the first place.
Exactly. Some people will suggest that North Korea has always wanted to be taken seriously and wanted to be brought to the table, wanted to be invited to the US, and wanted to be considered a major player. And in doing this and engaging with them, and in Trump inviting them and meeting with them, then what he's effectively doing is giving them what they've wanted all along. So there are these arguments that while this would appear to be a victory, and I think people would agree that anything that brings peace in the longer term should be seen as a victory, it doesn't mean he's seeing victories elsewhere. And we are seeing that in other areas, he is not seeing the victories that he wants. And we are starting to see more bad come out of these situations than good. So at what point does he stop trying to do this? How far will he go? And the concern is that people look at the unpredictability of Trump and say, I'm concerned he will go too far.
Talking of Trump, Boris Johnson has this week criticised our government's Brexit talk strategy, saying that it lacks guts, and suggested that Donald Trump could do a better job.
Let's put something into perspective first. Everything that Boris Johnson says, if we paid too much attention to, I think we'd drive ourselves into a bit of a tizzy. Boris Johnson has a way of doing things, and his way of doing things and his cycle of doing things is every 3 or 4 weeks, he will say something to undermine Theresa May and make her look silly. He will say something to undermine the government's position, and it's usually when the government is starting to lean or edge or sound in any way, shape or form like it's adopting a slightly softer Brexit than the pro-Brexiteers would like. He will then spend the next 3 weeks supporting her and backing everything she does and lauding her and talking up her leadership and talking about how great she is and what a great job she's doing and how well these negotiations are breaking. And then again, he'll go back and he'll undermine her again. And he does this very publicly. He does this very intentionally. And you start to question, what's his ulterior motive? Well, he has two ulterior motives. One is to deliver a Brexit that he supported and that he viewed was possible. The second, and I'm sure every single person who hears this is fully aware of this, Boris Johnson does have ambitions on the political scene. He wants to be Prime Minister one day, so he can be seen. And what he's doing is he is constantly and consistently weakening Theresa May so that when the day does come to push her aside, she's not going to put up much of a fight and people will be looking for people to replace her, and he will look like, I am the person who got Brexit over the line, I am the person who delivered Brexit, I'm the person to negotiate the new trade deal for the UK. And I really think that we're looking at later this year when we are going to start to see the Brexiteers who have these political ambitions to be PM through the next period of the Brexit talks are going to start edging their way in, and we're going to start to see very clearly who it is that wants to push her out. And again, I think it'll be later this year, and I think this time next year Theresa May's gone and we're going to see just who's got
that
ambition.
Is that prediction there, Craig?
I think so. I just think it's natural that she is not going to...
Take note, folks. June the 8th, 2019, Craig is saying that there will be no Prime Minister May, and it's going to be Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
I'd even say Theresa May gone by Christmas.
No chance.
But I think Boris Johnson is going to be one of those pushing. It's whether he's got the support. But I think everything he does right now is calculated, it's intentional, and the ultimate end goal for him is his political ambitions to be Prime Minister.
Well, we've seen the pound fall after the EU's Brexit negotiator Michel Barnier gave a thumbs down to the UK's latest proposal. He's rejected the idea that Britain should stay in the customs union until the end of 2021 unless a new customs agreement is agreed once Brexit has occurred. And he says the backstop cannot apply to the whole UK, but just to confuse everybody, could apply to Northern Ireland only. So that hasn't gone down particularly well, has it?
Well, no, but I mean, none of this has ever made any sense, let's be honest. The backstop applying to the Northern Ireland has stopped a border being put in place between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, but it hasn't stopped a border being put in place between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. So even the backstop, which was agreed at the end of last year, doesn't really preserve the Good Friday Agreement at all. It preserves part of it. So I don't really think that was workable either. The only thing that's workable is if the entire UK remains aligned with the Republic of Ireland. So that effectively means that the transition deal as a being extended beyond the end of 2020 is the only effective, or beyond the end of 2020 is the only effective backstop here. But the problem is neither side wants to be seen, or particularly the UK side doesn't want to be seen advocating an extension of the transition deal, because that will get enormous fury from the Brexiteers, because they will be saying, we're not delivering Brexit at all. What we're doing is we're delaying Brexit in the hope that it will one day fall apart. So they are absolutely ferociously opposed to an extension of the transition deal. So what else can we call it? Let's call it a backstop then. We'll go from Brexit to a transition to a backstop, and we'll extend that date and then we'll call it something else. And next thing we know, we're in 2025. We're not left the EU, although we have left the EU, but we're aligned with the EU. We're in the customs union. We're in the single. It's complete and utter nonsense with a different name. And this is the problem. The Good Friday Agreement and the preservation of it is such a complicated issue, and it's extremely difficult to resolve. And we're just being led down this road and treated like buffoons. And the simple fact of the matter is, until a technological solution or another solution can be found to resolve the Northern Ireland border issue and preserve the Good Friday Agreement, whatever you want to call it, we are in the EU until that happens.
Perhaps it's only a change in government.
Then that prolongs it even longer and longer and longer.
Or does it, though? Because, I mean, you know, this is like a slow, painful death, isn't it?
It's a slow, painful death, but I mean, I don't...
Slow, painful divorce, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, slow, painful divorce. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know what the alternative is, because Corbyn has been very... and please don't confuse what I'm about to say. Corbyn has been very clear that they want to leave the single market, and they are standing by the fact that they want to leave the EU. Now, let's not forget the fact that he has also been very vague about how he wants to leave the single market but remain aligned with everything, part of everything, with a customs agreement, with a customs union, etc. Yeah. Let's ignore all of that for a second, because nothing about any other part of this is clear. But both sides are promising to leave the EU and are trying to find different ways about it. The problem is, absolutely no one to this point has come up with a feasible way to do this, possibly apart from some of the real staunch Brexiteers who want a hard Brexit. But again, even that is not very good for this country.
One more thing about Europe, Craig. The ECB's remarks about clearing the way for an end to economic stimulus this year, that saw a problem for Italian bonds, particularly exposed, and all Eurozone government bonds were hit by those remarks on Wednesday. But the stronger prospect of an end to ECB bond buying during this year left Italy's debt looking particularly exposed, didn't it?
It did, because a number of these countries are relying on the ECB as a backstop, to use that word again, in order to continue to purchase their bonds and ensure that there is demand for them in the markets, because they know that there's always going to be a buyer of last resort. The prospect of the ECB exiting, I think we can't really get too worked up about it, because even when it stops buying new bonds, it's still going to continue to circulate the cash that it's already poured into the market, which is extremely substantial. So I don't think we can get too concerned about that side of things. Interesting that the commentary that we're seeing now from policymakers have become far less dovish. We've had policymakers recently talking about the fact that bond buying will likely end this year, or it's fair to assume that bond buying will end later this year. It's fair to assume that we could see an interest rate hike later next year. These are comments which we haven't really had from policymakers for some time. I think it was Peter Pryor a couple of days ago who suggested that at the meeting next week, which we'll come back to, is a point at which policymakers will discuss what happens post-September. So I think we're going to know very shortly what's going to happen with the end of QE and its three years or so experiment. And it looks as though they'll probably drag it out to the end of the year. I think it's pointless. 30 billion to zero would be perfectly okay in September, but they'll probably drop it to 15 for 3 months just to put us through 3 months of extra aggro. But yeah, it's certainly sounding a lot more hawkish from the ECB than we've been used to for a decade.
Before I let you go, Craig, let's have a brief look towards next week. It's going to be interesting. We've got North Korea and all the other fun and frolics for the EU Brexit negotiations, plus a lot more as well.
Yeah, Brexit negotiations. We've got the withdrawal bill back in Parliament, so that's going to be debated over the course of, well, it was meant to be one day, one solid 12-hour session, but Theresa May bowed to demands that they wanted two sessions, so she's changed it to 2 6-hour sessions, which is very generous of her. We've got the summit between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un in Singapore.
Hold that thought, though, Craig. You just said that as if, oh, it's quite a normal thing. 6 months ago, people would accuse you of being a bit loopy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, I think.
But we got used to the idea, haven't we?
You become numb to these things, don't you? And then there's also a lot on the economic front as well. So it's not going to be a boring week. We've got the ECB meeting on Thursday, which I've just referred to. We could get warnings about the end of QE. We've got the Federal Reserve meeting on Wednesday. So we're looking for a rate hike there. That market's almost entirely priced that in. So then we're looking for indications as to whether we're going to see one more this year after that or two. We've got the Bank of Japan meeting overnight, Thursday night, early Friday morning. No surprises, no changes expected there. I think we're still a long way off from the Bank of Japan ending its quantitative easing program. So three major central bank meetings, and then on Tuesday we've also got the UK jobs report. So I don't think we're going to be bored next week, and I don't think we're going to struggle for talking points either.
Looking forward to it already, Craig Earlham. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
And of course, you can hear that podcast and our reflections on it this time next week. And don't forget, this podcast is available on iTunes and Android. Have a good week.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.